It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor here at Best Ideas 2018, joining us from San Francisco, California. Artem Fokin is the founder and portfolio manager of Karocon Capital. Prior to founding Karocon, Artem was a principal at Outrider Management. Karocon Capital manages a focused fund which looks for special situations and long-term compounders. Artem's substantial legal expertise brings a greater ability to analyze complex corporate documentation accompanying extraordinary corporate events. Before entering the investment industry, Artem was an attorney with Greenberg in New York City and is admitted to the practice of law in the state of New York. Karocon Capital is named after a chest defense that emphasizes building safety and defensible positions before contemplating an offensive strategy. As we're going to hear more in a moment, the fund's core investment principles include, first, concentration when properly compensated. Second, risk is not equivalent to volatility. Third, non-economic selling can lead to attractive opportunities. Fourth, capital allocation is often underappreciated by the market. And fifth, incentives and insider ownership are paramount. On behalf of the MOI Global community, a very warm welcome back. It's great to have you here. Please proceed.
Thank you, Shai. It's a pleasure to be back. And today we will be presenting our idea, TripAdvisor. This is our legal disclaimer. A few words about the fund. The fund is named after Karocon Defense, which is defense in chess against the king's pawn opening. And the reason why we chose this name for the fund is because we see a lot of parallels between intelligent value investing and Karocon Defense. Karocon Defense focuses on building robust and solid positioning first for the black before contemplating counterattack. As value investors, we can see clear parallels between margin of safety, protecting your downside, and Karocon Defense. It's my second time of participating in a Manual of Idea conference. And Shai and John, thank you so much for inviting me back. Our prior idea, which we presented in June 2017, was Commerce Hub. It's done well since then. It has been roughly 6 months. And if there are any viewers who participated in the prior conference, we would also like to say that we remain very bullish on Commerce Hub. In fact, we increased our position after most recent third quarter results were announced. But let's go back to our today idea. It's a misunderstood platform business. This is how we label TripAdvisor. We are recommending a long position, and the most recent stock price is about $35. Now, let's go back in history and review what has been TripAdvisor up to. The stock is down 68% since its peak in 2014. Why does this opportunity even exist? First, we believe that both buy side and sell side are myopically focused on failed transition to instant booking, falling revenue per hotel shopper, and most recent Priceline reallocation of its marketing budget towards non-performance-based channels, which means moving their marketing budget away from such channel partners as TripAdvisor more towards TV advertising and similar brand-building initiatives. Second, we see a lot of investor fatigue in the name, and this is very understandable. You would be hard-pressed to find an investor who made money on the long side of TripAdvisor over the past few years. Finally, CAC is ignored by many traditional value investors. Just think about it. Stock is down roughly 70% since its peak. It's trading very close to its 52-week low. In fact, it's trading very close to its multi-year low. And one would expect that a lot of value investors will be using this type of situation as their hunting ground. However, many value investors stay away from tech, and that's why I think it's another reason why this company and why this opportunity exists and why the company is misunderstood. Finally, there are weak disclosure about non-hotel business. So to fully appreciate the strength of non-hotel business, an investor needs to look very intently and know what to look for in advance. And final reason, and we think it's one of the most important reasons for mispricing, is that many people apply linear thinking in non-linear context. And this is what we mean by this. Linear thinking cannot apply to platforms. And by platforms, we mean businesses that bring together supply and demand and that benefit from the network effect. And yet, we believe that many market participants are applying currently linear thinking to this very nonlinear situation. The next question, which we like to ask ourselves, okay, where does our variant perception come from? And we see a few places where it's coming from. First, we have a psychological edge here. We never invested in trade before August 2017, when we established our initial position. And after third quarter 2017, results were released in November, and the market clearly didn't like them, we substantially increased our position. It means that we came with fresh eyes, and we were not affected by losing a substantial amount of money on trade the way many prior shareholders were. We also spent lots of time historically studying platform businesses. Businesses that, as we said, bring supply and demand together and benefit from the network effect. And we know how poorly their financials look at the beginning and how lucrative such businesses become once they scale their operation. That's why our initial hypothesis was that Trip has a few platform businesses hidden within it. And we knew what to look for before we even started looking. Finally, we base our investment thesis on non-hotel business. While both sell side and buy side are myopically focused on hotel business and challenges which it has been experiencing. After we have combined our knowledge of platform businesses with studying what Trip has been doing over the past 3 or 4 years, we have realized what a gem TripAdvisor is. This is our elevator pitch. First, we can invest in TripAdvisor's dominant platform businesses hidden in a plain sight. Second, we can benefit from multi-year growth runway, and we will get hotel businesses, in our opinion, for almost free. We see upside of about 100% in 4 to 5 years, which equates to 15%+ IRR, but that we also get plenty of upside optionality for free. While we don't want to get too excited about this opportunity, we do believe that this upside which we outline would likely be exceeded with the next few years. Now, let's do overview of TripAdvisor. Obviously, we assume that most of conference participants are familiar with TripAdvisor and probably even use it in their research and booking of their travel. So this is capital structure of TripAdvisor at a glance. One thing we will point out is that this company has net cash position. The market cap is roughly $4.9 billion, and entire enterprise value is roughly $4.4 billion. What is TripAdvisor? Very simply defined, it's a leading online platform for travel content and community. It features millions of reviews and opinions, which cover millions of restaurants, millions of hotels, millions of attractions. It's a incredibly useful site, which we ourselves are very loyal users. Trip has two reporting segments. One segment is hotel business, and this is what most people talk about. However, there is second business, which is non-hotel. And non-hotel includes three very distinct businesses. Number one is restaurants, number two is attractions, and number three is vacation rental. When we look at TripAdvisor non-hotel business, the disclosure is very limited. Trip discloses key financial metrics, revenue, and adjusted EBITDA, meaning EBITDA before stock-based compensation, for non-hotel segment in its entirety. In other words, no financial metrics are disclosed for its sub-segments, restaurants, attractions, and vacation rentals, on a standalone basis. Thus, we need to act as a Sherlock Holmes and find out the truth. Before we dive into TripAdvisor, we would like to introduce a historical case study of OpenTable, which probably all of us are familiar with, and probably many of us are very loyal users. And the reason why we want to introduce this case study of OpenTable, we want to show on a very analyzable and a very simple business how network effect plays out and how platforms are being built. Then we will take that historical knowledge and we will apply it to TripAdvisor and see what reasonable conclusions we can achieve. OpenTable, let's go back to 2009 and learn how OpenTable was making money. This is a slide from OpenTable presentation. And there are three ways how OpenTable was making money back then. First, restaurants were paying monthly subscription fee of $1.99. There were some premium upsell opportunities, but they're not really relevant for this discussion. Then, OpenTable will charge $1 per person for every reservation made through OpenTable. For example, if I go with a friend for dinner for two and we make reservation on OpenTable, then our restaurant will pay OpenTable $2 because there are two people coming to dinner. And finally, there are some installation fees which come roughly $600 to $700 per restaurant, and it's typically one-time charge in nature. So they don't play a significant role in the revenue model. And back in 2009, about 52% of revenue were coming in terms of as subscription fees, and 43% were coming as dining fees. So that was OpenTable. Let's look at this. OpenTable, and now we're talking about North America, grew its installed restaurants with a CAGR of 29% a year over 9 years. Just look at this. It went up pretty much 10x. In 2004, OpenTable had about 2,400 restaurants on the platform. And by the end of 2013, it had almost 24,000, pretty much 10x. Now, but Seated Diners grew even faster at 47% CAGR over 9 years. This is how those two growth graphs look put against each other. And the important takeaway here is this. Seated Diners grew faster than average installed restaurants grew in every single year. Why is that? It's very simple, because more and more Seated Diners came to every single restaurant, or rather to average restaurant. And that metric alone grew at 12%. If we were to look at physical world, at all traditional brick and mortar world of either retail or of restaurants, that would be called like-for-like sales. And the logical question which we want to pose here is this: how many businesses do we collectively know that can grow their like-for-like sales at 12% for 8 years? My answer is that not many. Now, reservations revenue per average restaurant grew at roughly 10.5% CAGR for several years. And this is how OpenTable revenue mix changed since 2006 to 2013. As you would see, revenue reservations started below 40% back in 2006. But by 2013, it reached 60% of the entire revenue. The important thing is to look at adjusted EBITDA per average restaurant. And this metric is provided here in thousands. And that grew by a factor of 2.3 in just 6 years. Now let's look at margins, both EBITDA margins and incremental EBITDA margins. And the important takeaway which we would point to our viewers is that all of us watch for incremental margins when you're looking at a network effect business. The important year for us, in our opinion here, is 2005. Look at this. Immediately prior, in 2004, OpenTable was burning cash. It generated almost 50% negative adjusted EBITDA margin. 2005 was better, but it was still losing money. However, all the signals of the turning point which is coming were there, and they were, in our opinion, quite identifiable. Maybe they were not identifiable back then in 2005, 2006, because our collective as investors, as society thinking about platform businesses was not as developed as it's developed now in 2017. But now using that knowledge, we can apply it to other businesses. So look at 2005. The EBITDA margin is still negative, almost 13%. But if you look at incremental margins, they're highly positive. They're at 40%. And by incremental margin, just for the sake of avoiding any confusion here, we mean change in EBITDA divided by change in revenue. So that margin was 40%. As you can see, after that, next year in 2006, EBITDA margins turned positive and reached almost 20%. And that, by the way, is more than it's roughly 33 percentage points improvement compared to 2005. And incremental margins were 72%. Like, that's incredible. And if you follow the trajectory, how the margins evolved over the next several years, they pretty much doubled from 06 to 2013. They went from below 20 in 2006, 19.3 to be precise, to 41.2 in 2013. Now, as more restaurants joined the platform, margins skyrocketed. Just look at this. When there were only 3,000 restaurants on the platform, EBITDA margin was negative. However, by the time when the number of restaurants got to 30,000 roughly, EBITDA margins were highly positive. Now, what's the secret of OpenTable? The secret is very simple, and it's very, very elegant. More restaurants on the platform attract more diners, and then more diners attract more restaurants, and the virtuous cycle is created. It's a very simple, but it's a very powerful concept. So why is OpenTable such a great business? Because it's a platform. It has strong network effects, because OpenTable brought supply, restaurants with perishable inventory, such as dinner table on a particular night, and demand, which are restaurant goers, meaning all of us. And once OpenTable gained initial traction, it has created a virtuous cycle. It operates in the market where which has winner takes it all dynamics. And wide mode is expanding over time as potential entrants will face a chicken and egg problem. And the business model is highly scalable and it has very, very high incremental margins, as we saw. Now, with that historical case study behind us, let's go back to TripAdvisor and dig into each sub-segment of its non-hotel business. And we will start with restaurants. TripAdvisor restaurants evolved from simply millions of reviews with next to zero revenue and monetization to a major platform business. How did this happen? Prior to 2014, TripAdvisor had lots of traffic, lots of eyeballs, and lots of reviews on restaurant pages. No real monetization. Then, in second quarter 2014, TripAdvisor acquired La Fourchette. That was a game changer. La Fourchette at the time of the acquisition was a nice business. It was online reservation business, which is very similar to OpenTable in the US. It had strong presence in two countries, namely France and Spain. It had 12,000 bookable restaurants on its platform. TripAdvisor management had very clear vision for La Fourchette at the time of the acquisition. We will just quote what they said back then. La Fourchette has already achieved scale in these two large markets. They have shown they can operate at a profit while growing at a fast clip. And they are loved by their restaurant partners and diners alike. After that, the strategy became invest in expansion and grow internationally. Grow beyond those two countries, France and Spain. Europe is large. Let's keep growing. La Fourchette is growing rapidly, and TripAdvisor can help fuel even faster future growth by turning some portion of our incredible amount of global restaurant traffic into seated diners. Trip provided two critical ingredients to fuel La Fourchette growth. First, traffic to its website, and second, growth capital. And then we want to ask ourselves a question. Why TripAdvisor restaurants such a great business? And the answer is the same as we gave in case of OpenTable. It's a platform. Look, it has strong network effect. And similar to OpenTable, it operates in a place where winner takes all dynamics. Wide mode that is expanding with every single new restaurant and every single new user. And it's highly scalable and it has very high incremental margins, exactly as OpenTable. Now, let's talk about CEO's vision. I'm thinking about building the restaurant business to be very meaningful for TripAdvisor over 3 to 5+ year time frame. And that's going to take more than a quarter or two of investment dollars. That was said in third quarter 2014. So management very clearly set expectations, in our opinion, that they are not going to use Laughford Shack and restaurant business as a cash cow. Opposite is true. They will be heavily investing in this very promising business. Core strategy was to expand into international markets. And this is exactly what the Trip did organically and through small tack-on M&A transactions used to expedite entry into some new countries. For example, Trip acquired a company called Dimi in second quarter 2015 to enter Australia. If you look at this, this is what TripAdvisor was doing. They would bring supply, restaurant tables, and they will bring demand, restaurant goers. In fact, demand, restaurant goers, all of us, were already on the platform because we were already coming to TripAdvisor web pages to review and read reviews of various restaurants around the globe. TripAdvisor restaurants, management understood it from the very beginning and executed really well in our opinion. This is another quote from back in 2015. Restaurants, it's a very local product. There tends to be a winner-take-all or close to it in a given city. If you get enough restaurants and you have enough user demand and enough app installs, that's very habit-forming. You go back to the app. And in almost all of these businesses, it's a cost of customer acquisition that drives the margin. And when you can get that cost of customer acquisition down to be zero, because it's a repeat user, the rest of the business just churns out margin. Now, let's talk a little bit about restaurants in terms of product and user experience. So back in second quarter 2014, restaurant goers can make reservations on La Fourchette website or via La Fourchette app. Starting third quarter 2014, TripAdvisor launched instant reservation features for restaurants on its own website and on its app. La Fourchette still remains as a website, as an app, as a potential destination. And the important point to make here is that both locals and tourists use La Fourchette and TripAdvisor. The real numbers have never been disclosed, but we suspect that most locals tend to use La Fourchette as an app or website, while most tourists tend to use TripAdvisor. Because now, as we said, you can book restaurants directly on TripAdvisor, either through website or through the app. Now, how TripAdvisor makes money? This is a web page from La Fourchette website. Let's go through that and point out a few important things. Let's say you're a restaurant and you want to be on La Fourchette and you want to be on TripAdvisor. You can either go with zero package and literally pay zero euros, free, completely. Or you can pay 59 euros per month, or you can get premium package and pay 89 euros. It's up to you. Now, if you obviously pay more, you will get more blows and whistles and you may benefit in different ways, but there's no pressure. Importantly, and this is the second line, which says your reservation button on TripAdvisor, it says that TripAdvisor and La Fourchette will charge 2 euros per cover. And per cover means per person. So we make reservation for 5 of us, and then we come to the restaurant. Restaurant will get charged will charge 10 euros, which is 5 people multiplied by 2 euros. So, and now I would like to bring back the slide from OpenTable. OpenTable was charging significantly higher subscription, $200, and average was coming actually at 270, but it was charging only $1 per person. So as you can see, TripAdvisor is charging less in terms of its fixed subscription fee, but it charges more in terms of per person charge per reservation. Not surprisingly, when the business is immature and only starting, most likely TripAdvisor would be making less money than OpenTable with the same small base of reservation because TripAdvisor subscription fee is lower. However, once you get to a certain point of people coming to a restaurant by using reservation feature on your website, on your app, TripAdvisor actually should be making more money. Now, let's talk about growth runway and total addressable market for restaurants. At the time of the acquisition, Trip Management compared restaurant online reservation penetration between the US and Europe. And just by way of a reminder, we're talking about first and second quarter 2020. Management said in the US it's 20%, and in Europe it's single digits, and in some cases low single digits in nearly every international market. The management also said, one quarter later, it's hard for us to see a path whereby huge numbers of travelers, huge number of locals, won't be making their restaurant reservations on their smartphone. And we agree with management on this assessment. Let's talk about margins. Restaurant adjusted EBITDA or EBITDA margins have never been disclosed by TripAdvisor. However, we know a few things. First, we know from the second quarter call of 2017, restaurants achieving top line scale that will help it approach adjusted EBITDA break even this year. And then on the third quarter, company said, restaurants turned adjusted EBITDA positive in the quarter amid continued investment in sales, marketing, and product experience. So effectively, what we know is that since the time of the acquisition of La Fourchette, which was closed in second quarter 2014, TripAdvisor restaurants were consistently losing money because they were investing in growth and they were investing in their network. However, they just turned around. And third quarter was the first quarter when the company, when this business, restaurant business, posted EBITDA positive, adjusted EBITDA positive margin. We think that's an inflection point. We also believe that restaurant margins have been negative for a long time, as we said. And another important data point is that we saw in a historical case study of OpenTable that about 35% adjusted EBITDA margins are definitely achievable. TripAdvisor restaurant. In mature markets, restaurant business should be already generating good margins. Remember, on first quarter 2014, the management said that La Fourchette already achieved scale in these two large markets, meaning Spain and France, and they have shown they can operate at a profit. On another call, they said, we're confident that the core markets continue to grow at a good pace, and that generally we consider a profitable growth. Again, emphasis here on the word profitable growth. But we expect to continue to reinvest those profits into our newer markets, and depending on the speed at which we want to enter new markets, that's going to take us negative in the restaurant business because it's such a good opportunity. Now, let's look at key metrics which we should monitor and forecast. The first key metric is number of restaurants on the platform, which people, like all of us, can book through TripAdvisor or La Fourchette. And the second key metric, in our opinion, is number of seated diners, which, and that metric we discussed at length when we were discussing our historical case study of OpenTable. Now, this is how TripAdvisor restaurants grew in terms of bookable restaurants. It has never disclosed those numbers on a consistent basis. So we just put together what we were able to find. And here's the graph. As you can see, the number of restaurants grew by this. And also you would see that certain quarters are missing here. And this is not because we forgot to include them, but simply because we did not find information. And that's roughly 49% CAGR. TripAdvisor restaurants. Let's look at reviewed restaurants here. Here's an interesting thing. While there are about, as we pointed out, 46,000 restaurants right now, which are on the platform and can be booked by you and me, there are 4.4 million reviewed restaurants and dining establishments on TripAdvisor website. This is a pretty incredible number. So let's look at penetration. And with penetration, we mean how many restaurants are bookable among all those reviewed restaurants on the platform. And this is penetration. As you can see, it just got above 1%. In other words, it's tiny. We think that increasing penetration of bookable restaurants will provide incredible growth runway. Think about this. The gap is massive. 46,000 versus 44 million. And by the way, we're not forecasting that penetration will go above 10%, even long term. It may or may not. That's not a judgment which we need to make here. Even if penetration increases to 2 or 3 percentage points, TripAdvisor will benefit tremendously. Now, let's look at key metric number two, seated diners. Well, another challenge here. Trip has never disclosed CitiDynas number. But very recently, in Q1 2017, Trip started disclosing growth in CitiDynas as percent. And here's the numbers which we put together. In first quarter 2017, CitiDynas grew by almost 30%. In second quarter, they grew by 50%. And in third quarter, they grew by 40%. What, in our opinion, are drivers behind CitiDynas growth? As we saw with OpenTable, we expect two factors to drive growth in CitiDynas going forward. First, it's very simple. More restaurants joining the platform and becoming bookable will drive growth in CitiDynas. And that's really obvious. That's linear part. This is where it got interesting in our opinion, and this is where it gets nonlinear. As the network expands, CitiDynas per restaurant should also increase. As a result, what happens is this. You get a double benefit, double impact. Not only your CitiDynas are growing because you got more new territory, meaning new restaurants, but also you get high engagement, high CitiDynas per restaurant, which we compared with like-for-like sales in more traditional businesses. That's why we think that CitiDynas growth can be 20-30% per year for many years. We also think that most market participants do not think about these drivers much. Even if they do, they likely think in linear terms, and a linear function fails to account for intricacies of the network effect. If TripAdvisor can grow 20-30% a year for many years, driven by low penetration of bookable restaurants, increasing adoption of online reservations, and increasing customer engagement, that would make this business incredibly valuable. One thing which we want to point here is that La Fourchette and TripAdvisor are the dominant player in most European countries. Think about OpenTable dominance in the US. That's exactly what TripAdvisor and La Fourchette are in many, many European countries. And the beauty of this business is that because of the network effect, it's such a powerful node. Once you build that network, it's very difficult for anybody to come and disrupt. This is a market where winner takes it all, and we think TripAdvisor Restaurants is the winner. Let's now move to second subsegment of TripAdvisor non-hotel business, which is attractions. Let's go again through history, and you will see that history of this attractions business is quite similar to the history of TripAdvisor restaurants. Prior to 2014, TripAdvisor had lots of traffic, lots of eyeballs, and lots of reviews, but no real monetization. And then game changer happened as well. And by the way, interestingly enough, it happened about the same time when TripAdvisor acquired La Fourchette, which was a changer for the restaurant business. So in this case, Trip closed its acquisition of Viator. Viator at the time of the acquisition looked like this. More than 20,000 bookable tours and attractions, and more than 600,000 user reviews, photos, and videos. Trip management clearly outlined its vision of becoming an OTA for attractions. This is a quote from management. If we can hope for our destiny to be that of online travel agency for attractions, then TripAdvisor brings the demand, Viator brings the supply, and it's a pretty nice match on a product that is sold online with high margins. Gosh, looks very similar to the hotel space, and we all know a couple of OTAs in the hotel space that are very big and very profitable. So we like those proof points. That was said as early as Q1 2015, when TripAdvisor announced the acquisition, but didn't even close it. Now, let's talk about product and user experience for attractions. So you can purchase attractions such as tours or museum tickets on viator.com, TripAdvisor, or through TripAdvisor app. Buying on TripAdvisor is super convenient because one can read reviews and then immediately make a booking. It also allows you to skip lines and save lots of time. So imagine all this, and in our opinion, it makes using attractions is a no-brainer. Now, this is how it looks like. Imagine we're going to Paris, and we want to go and tour the south. We can go to the Eiffel, and immediately we can find, skip the line, the south pass. $42, we buy it, and we're ready to go. That's pretty awesome. Or we can go to TripAdvisor. We buy that, skip the line, the south pass. Again, we are ready to go. Let's look at total addressable market. We think it's giant. According to Focusrite, which is the leading research service in the travel space, it's 80 billion. Again, it can be 80, it can be 90, it can be 70. Honestly, given where TripAdvisor is starting, the exact number is almost irrelevant because right now TripAdvisor is such a small part of the giant market. Now, how do attractions make money? The answer is simple. It's just an OTA for attractions. Attractions use commission model similar to OTA in the hotel space. However, attractions commissions are even higher. OTAs typically charge hotels somewhere between 15 and 20%. Attractions, we believe, usually charge attraction vendors between 20 and 25%. What does it mean? It means that attractions also face extremely fragmented base of vendors that possess little bargaining power and have very little resources to compete with attractions by acquiring customers directly. Think about it. Let's say you go to Las Vegas and you want to take helicopter tour over Grand Canyon. You can go to TripAdvisor and book it there, or you can go to a bunch of websites of small providers and compare them. What are you going to do? Most likely, we'll just go to TripAdvisor. It means that those helicopter tour companies cannot really attract traffic directly to their website. That, in our opinion, compares incredibly favorably to OTAs, which obviously display and show many independent and small hotels, but also will show hotels that are on the platform of Marriott or platform of Intercontinental, Hyatt, Starwood, you name it. Which means that OTAs face a few giant hotel players who always try to get customers directly to their website. Punchline, attractions is a better business than OTAs due to higher commissions and lower bargaining power of vendors. TripAdvisor attractions, in our opinion, also faces incredibly long growth runway. This is a quote from second quarter 2017 earnings call. We expect attractions will be a key driver of non-hotel revenue growth and adjusted EBITDA profitability this year. Another quote, attractions as the one that we believe has the biggest short, medium, and long-term upside for us. But if you take conversion as your near-term, you take marketing channel growth as your kind of mid-term driver, and continued growth in supply as your long-term driver, you've got a set of beautiful characteristics. And finally, from the third quarter prepared remarks, attractions continue to be a key driver of non-hotel segment revenue and profit growth as we continue to drive both partner supply and traveler demand growth in our marketplace. This is how attractions have been growing. The margins of the business are great. That's another thing which was said on the margin side. And as you can see, the management does not tell us much about this critical subject. If we look at bookable attractions over the past years, they grew by a factor of almost 3.5 from the time Viator was acquired by TripAdvisor. However, if you look at attractions reviewed, we're talking about 875 million. We're talking about 875, which is incredibly difficult number. Now, if we look at penetration, you will see that penetration is still below 10%. So it has a long way to go. Obviously, it's not as low as in the case of restaurants, but still, there is a long way. That's why we think TripAdvisor attractions can grow 20-30% a year for many years because of low penetration and increasing adoption of online reservations. Let's look at now at the third subsegment of vacation rentals, of non-hotel business, which is vacation rentals. In our view, this is the least important component of non-hotel business. Vacation rent, why? Vacation rentals is the least differentiated product within non-hotel business. In a way, it's what we call me-too product. And there are several other players offering something similar. For example, HomeAway offers product which is quite similar in our opinion. Trip offers vacation rentals because it wants to offer the full breadth of accommodation options to travelers. This is how bookable vacation rentals grew over the past 3 years. It's roughly 2.6, a factor of 2.65. Now, if we look at vacation rentals growth and margins, there is not much disclosure, but this is what we found. We suspect that vacation rentals are the slowest growing subsegment within non-hotel business. We also suspect that vacation rentals have been profitable for a long time. Why is that? The answer is simple. When we look at HomeAway, which was subsequently acquired by Expedia, and which was, in our opinion, a pretty good comp for vacation rental business on TripAdvisor platform, we will see that HomeAway was generating mid-teens EBITDA margins while growing very rapidly at the same time. So we think TripAdvisor, vacation rental business, should be having similar margins. What's the future of vacation rentals? This is what the management said as recent as third quarter 2017. This, meaning vacation rentals, remains a complementary, profitable business for us, and it nicely rounds out consumers' accommodation options on TripAdvisor. What we think in terms of growth and margin forecast? Well, we think vacation rentals would keep growing at 10-15% a year. And we think TripAdvisor vacation rentals would remain profitable and be a cash generator for Trip. Okay. What we've done with you at this point is we've gone in quite detail through three subsegments of non-hotel business. Now, we will remind you that revenue and EBITDA are not disclosed for each subsegment. They disclose only on the aggregate level. To make things worse, we don't know exact relative size of those three subsegments. The management, however, recently said that attractions is the largest. They didn't say much about relative size of restaurants versus vacation rentals or even their size relative to attractions, except that attractions is the largest. So now we're moving to historical financials, forecast and valuation. And again, that will be done on the aggregate level. So first, let's look at how non-hotel business evolved at TripAdvisor. It grew at 46% CAGR since 2014, both organically and because there were few acquisitions, such as Viator and La Fourchette. Now, this is margins. And as you see, adjusted EBITDA margins improved dramatically. This is the EBITDA absolute numbers, and we will move to margins in a second. As you can see, it typically was consistently losing money, except for some spikes in third quarter 2015, third quarter 2016. And by the way, you can probably guess by now that third quarter is their strongest quarter from the seasonality perspective. And importantly, second quarter and third quarter 2017, it turned consistently positive. And this is EBITDA margins as we promised. And as you can see, in third quarter 2017, non-hotel business posted its record high adjusted EBITDA margin of 35%. Now, what's behind 35% adjusted EBITDA margin in third quarter 2017? Well, third quarter benefits from seasonality. As we said, it's the best quarter. Now, let's think about it. We know from the management earnings call that restaurants just got above adjusted EBITDA break-even. Okay, we don't know what above break-even means, so let's assume 2%. Let's also assume that restaurants are somewhere between 20 and 25%. We don't know for sure. This is just our best educated guess. Okay. If those assumptions are roughly right, then attractions and vacation rentals combined had adjusted EBITDA margin of 42 to 45% in third quarter 2017, which is incredible. Now, remember we spoke about the importance of incremental adjusted EBITDA margins in case of OpenTable and how they are, in our view, the best leading indicator to watch out for the breakout in EBITDA margins and to watch for the inflection point? Well, let's look at incremental EBITDA margins for non-hotel business here. Look at this. First quarter, 67% incremental EBITDA margins. Second quarter and third quarter, they were above 100. For the record, we don't expect higher than 100% EBITDA margins to continue. But let's look again at this first quarter number, 67%. And look at this. In the first quarter, EBITDA margins were still negative, minus 26. But incremental margins already turned positive, hugely positive. And look what happened in the next two quarters. Margins shoot from minus 26 to 17 and then to 35. So these are the numbers which we should be focusing on. Now, let's look at growth of revenue versus growth in costs. You will see here that pretty much every single quarter since late 2015, or probably even below that, revenue for non-hotel business was growing significantly faster than costs were growing. And look at the most recent three quarters. Revenue grew 18.5%, 30.7%, and 25.7%, while costs grew 4.3% in the first quarter, and costs actually dropped in 4.7% and 3.5% in second and third quarter of 2017, respectively. So what's happening is that, in our opinion, TripAdvisor was investing into growth and expanding into getting more and more supply, meaning attractions and restaurants and vacation rentals on its platform. And eventually now we're seeing the payback of those investments. And we think that payback will continue. This is TripAdvisor non-hotel business revenue forecast. This is our bear case. So we think over the next several years, it will be growing at a CAGR of roughly 15%. This is our base case forecast, again, for revenue non-hotel business. In that case, we're projecting 20%, actually 19. And this is our bull case, 23.5. Now, let's look at adjusted EBITDA margins forecast. This is, again, our bear case. So we say, okay, in our bear case, EBITDA margins will get to 20, 22% and will stay there. This is our base case where we're projecting continuous ability to scale of TripAdvisor non-hotel businesses due to powerful network effect and how the operating leverage will benefit the company. And this is our bull case. For bull case, we believe a lot of things need to go right, so we will not be relying on that. But we want to show that because we think it's possible. Now, how do we value TripAdvisor? Okay, we can do a few things. Let's look at TripAdvisor in 2020, meaning non-hotel business only. Adjusted EBITDA is $263 million in our base case. We're making assumption of increasing number of shares by 2% a year because of ongoing stock-based compensation. This is how our valuation looks like. We can put multiple between 12 and 16 times. We think the high end is more appropriate given the quality of the business. And we get to price per share of TripAdvisor. There's also cash buildup after tax, after CapEx, because it would be building up, because the cash will be building up on TripAdvisor balance sheet. And if we put it all together, this is our total value per share in 2020. We can also fast forward more into the future and say, okay, how it would look like in 2022. This is our adjusted EBITDA for $412 million. Again, we're putting dilution of 2% a year, and we're utilizing similar methodology. And this is where we get to the range between $37 to $48 per share. And again, this is only non-hotel business. And to put things in perspective, right now, shares trade of TripAdvisor, which includes hotel and non-hotel business, trading at roughly $35. Hotel business, financials, and valuation. A few remarks. As we stated at the very beginning, our thesis is based on our deep analysis and understanding of non-hotel business. This is our edge. Our views on hotel business are less important for our investment case. However, because hotel business is there, we will still share some of our views. Let's look at TripAdvisor hotel business revenue. It's roughly flat in the past 3 years. Not much to get excited about. Now, this is TripAdvisor hotel business EBITDA. If you look at third quarter 2014 and you compare third quarter 2014 to third quarter 2017, it's down 55%. And it has been several years. Again, that doesn't look too exciting. Now, let's look at TripAdvisor hotel business and compare costs and revenue. Costs have been growing faster than revenue every single quarter since first quarter 2015. That's why the darker line is always above the lighter green line. This looks horrible. But as Mark Twain is often misquoted, the reports of the TripAdvisor hotel business death are greatly exaggerated. TripAdvisor average monthly unique visitors, both hotel and non-hotel, have remained healthy and, in fact, have been growing. Look at this. This is a great growth in user engagement. That doesn't look to me as dying business. This is average monthly unique hotel shoppers only for the quarter, and that also has been healthy and growing. Yes, it's not growing anymore 18 or 20% year over year, but hey, 5, 6, 7, 11% growth, which it showed over the past few quarters, that's still pretty healthy. Now, TripAdvisor revenue per hotel shopper has decreased by 30%, and we admit that. And it shows here how much it dropped. Look at this. In the old good days of 2014, it was posting 56, 59 cents, and now it's down to 40 in the most recent quarter. What is behind the decreases in revenue per hotel shopper? Would be the next logical question. Few reasons. First, failed instant booking initiative that has been significantly curtailed in 2017. So we assume that most of our viewers are familiar with instant booking transition, but for those who are not, we will outline it very briefly. Historically, TripAdvisor was making money through meta search. When you go to TripAdvisor website and you want to book a hotel in Munich or Paris or Rome, you do a search and you read the reviews, and you also see how much that hotel would cost you on different websites. And it could show you Priceline, Expedia, maybe Marriott directly, maybe a few other OTAs, and then you can click on any of those. And if you click, TripAdvisor will get paid by that OTA or hotel provider. It was a great business. However, in 2014, TripAdvisor decided to transition to instant booking. And what they decided to do is that now you can book hotels directly on TripAdvisor, which in theory sounds like a great user experience and very beneficial, financially beneficial for TripAdvisor itself, because TripAdvisor will be acting as a front end while all the back end will actually be handled by an OTA or hotel where you're making a reservation through TripAdvisor website or through the app. So again, it sounded good in theory, but it didn't work in practice as well. Second, there is a shift of traffic to mobile, which monetizes only at 30 or 35% of desktop monetization. So in other words, even if you don't lose any hotel shoppers, but your hotel shoppers simply move from their desktop to mobile, TripAdvisor already will be making less money as measured by revenue per hotel shopper. Third, cost per click and meta search side of TripAdvisor hotel business has been going down. In other words, Expedia, Priceline, Marriott, and all other similar players were bidding less money for each click. Now, what is behind increases in hotel business costs that have been increasing faster than revenue? First, there is pressure from Google. Second, and by pressure from Google, we mean it costs TripAdvisor more and more to acquire traffic through Google. Second, TV advertising campaign would generate return on investments with a substantial time lag was launched in 2017. In second quarter 2017, TripAdvisor spent $16 million on TV advertising, and third quarter 2017, $42 million. Now, if we add back these long-term investments in TripAdvisor brand, then margins in hotel business would look significantly better. Why are we not concerned long-term about the hotel business? Well, there are many reasons. So first, user engagement is incredibly healthy, and we showed that. Second, Trip can go, and it appears that it's doing exactly that, back to meta search model and cut back on instant booking. And that way, it will kind of go back roughly to the level of profitability which it had before it tried to go into instant booking. Third, TV advertising would either benefit Trip long-term, and we will benefit the shareholders, or it will be cut down and eliminated. Fourth, mobile is the future, and Trip Mobile is doing incredibly well. It's approaching 50% of overall traffic, and mobile is growing incredibly fast, 20% plus. App traffic as percent of mobile traffic is about 40%, and app traffic has zero acquisition costs, because there's no Google involved. You just go on your smartphone, tap on TripAdvisor icon, and you're on the app. That's zero acquisition cost for that traffic. Margins in mobile should be better than in desktop for exactly that reason, because about 40% comes through direct through the app rather than through Google. And sixth, price line cutting on performance-based marketing is not disastrous. What scared a lot of people around third quarter 2017 financial results were released was the commentary from Priceline CEO, who at the RBC investment conference said something along these lines. We're going to cut our budget, which go to performance-based marketing, and focus on brand building, such as TV and other advertising campaigns. And the reason he said why the Priceline wants to do that is because Priceline doesn't want to take its dollars and feed into someone who will be competing with Priceline. Well, you know, it's possible that Priceline CEO meant many people. It could have meant Google, it could have meant Trivago, it could have meant TripAdvisor. Almost like it probably meant all three. Our hypothesis that commentary applied mostly to Trivago and to Google rather than to TripAdvisor. It applies to TripAdvisor to some extent, but we think not as much as to Google and Trivago. But think about this. How bad it can be. If you're a supplier to Walmart and you're selling some widgets and Walmart cuts you out, it will take time and effort to replace that channel. And by the way, you may not even find a replacement for all that volume because probably Walmart was taking a lot of your volume. But meta search is very different. Online meta search auctions are different for this reason. There is always someone else there who is willing to buy those clicks. If Priceline does not buy, someone else will, either Expedia, hotel chains, or another OTA, they will. So the price could go down because Priceline may be not competing as much, but your volume would not go away. And by the way, if Priceline drops its bid and Expedia gets market share, we doubt that Priceline will be happy. And we think at some point it will want to go back and try to rebuild its share. Now, hotel business valuation. This is really more art than science because as we described, right now business is quite depressed. And we think those concerns are temporary in its nature. So, number one, we believe that TripAdvisor hotel business remains a very important channel partner for OTAs and hotels. Second, 2017 adjusted EBITDA is depressed due to TV advertising. Thus, taking average EBITDA between last 12 months and 2016 is a better approach in our view. However, keep in mind that 2016 EBITDA was also depressed because of their instant booking initiative. Now, what do we put as multiple? That's a great question. We think that 12x is fairly appropriate, given that we're taking an average between 2016 adjusted EBITDA, depressed by instant booking, and LTM adjusted EBITDA, which is still depressed by instant booking, and even more depressed by TV advertising. This is how math looks like. In this case, we're getting roughly $29 per share per value of hotel business. And by the way, remember, currently share price is $35. Valuation. Let's put it all together. we can look at trip valuation from multiple angles. We think about it as a compounder that we will hold for many years, 5 to 10 years, and hopefully more, and will generate 15% plus IRR. Now, you can look at it from another angle that will be a little bit more mathematical, but we don't want to get caught in false sense of precision. Non-hotel business is worth $43 in 2022, as we showed before. Hotel business value will remain stagnant, $29. See our price slide. And by the way, we think, assuming that that value will remain stagnant and doesn't move anywhere, is incredibly punitive on trip hotel business. If we put it together, we get to $72 in 5 years versus spot price of $35. And that's 15%+ IRR. Please note that we're ignoring many, many things here. We're ignoring benefits from share buybacks, which historically has been doing. And if they keep doing that, that will be very substantial. We also included only cash buildup from non-hotel business, but we did not include any cash buildup from hotel business. We also did not include anything productive that company can make with that cash. Now, that's all. We hope you like the presentation on TripAdvisor. Again, we think it's an incredible business. It has been building two very powerful platform businesses, namely restaurants and attractions within itself, which have been hidden for a long time from the public because of the way TripAdvisor has been reporting, and also because of the business nature of those platform businesses. They lose money at the beginning because they need to build that network. But once network is built and it gets going, the virtuous cycle is created. More supply brings more demand, and more demand brings more supply. And those businesses are incredibly difficult to disrupt because any potential entrant will face chicken and egg problem. That's what we have within TripAdvisor. And as we said, we think TripAdvisor hotel business is not bad either. Thank you so much.
Artem, thank you. That was absolutely remarkable. It's so great to have such a unique and in-depth presentation on a very interesting idea. So thank you. Before we engage in the Q&A, I'd like to do some housekeeping. Artem did indeed present previously here at the MOI Global Online Conferences. He presented Commerce Hub. Anyone who is participating at this event who is an MOI Global member certainly has unlimited replay to our previous events, and we are very happy to make certain that Artem's prior presentation is fully available on a member-only basis. So Artem, thank you. And this is a 2-for-1, I guess. Going to the Q&A, if we could jump back to slide number 12, I would love to ask, in what way do you assess if the moat of TripAdvisor is becoming incrementally more wide or more narrow? Are there any elements beyond the quantitative that you could point to?
Great question, Shai. Thank you for asking. And I will first mention a few quantitative factors, and then, as I said, we will move a little bit towards more qualitative factors. So on quantitative factors, it's obviously supply, which we can measure in terms of the number of restaurants, as using restaurants as an example, which are on the platform. That's one. We can also look at number of restaurant goers, meaning seated diners, which TripAdvisor has recently started disclosing. And more important one, which TripAdvisor has not been disclosing, unfortunately, is the number of seated diners per restaurant. That would be the best way to measure engagement and repeat use. So that's on quantitative side. Now, on qualitative side, that's a little bit more anecdotal, and it would also be involve judgment to a bigger extent and be more subjective. I will give you a couple of examples. You can just go our TripAdvisor app, and this is what I did. I asked my wife, and I asked her, could you look at TripAdvisor and see if we need to book a restaurant in Paris for 2 days from now? And by the way, we were in San Francisco, not planning to go to Paris at the time, so it was pure test. Now tell me, how does it feel? Like, does it feel a good experience? Like, okay. And she never used TripAdvisor booking restaurants before that feature. So she opened an app and very quickly looked at a bunch of restaurants and like, oh, that's really smooth experience. I really love it. Ask her, do you like TripAdvisor app right now for booking restaurant in France, or would you like OpenTable app, which we obviously both of us use a lot, to make dinner reservations in the US? And she said, wow, I think actual TripAdvisor is a way smoother experience. At least this is how it feels to me. And remember, that was the first time when she tested the app. So to me, that's an interesting qualitative drive, qualitative assessment. If people like that experience, they like user interface, and they like UI, then they're more likely to come back. Because honestly, when we're in the US and let's say we use OpenTable, we can easily find a phone number of a restaurant in San Francisco, in New York, or Chicago, wherever you are, make a call, and we speak the same language, and we make a reservation. Now, imagine you're traveling internationally. You're in France, you're in Portugal, and your biggest help there is concierge at the hotel. You go downstairs and you say, hi, you know, I would like to go to this restaurant. Could you help me make a reservation? And they're very nice people, and they will almost help you. But as with Airbnb being more and more prevalent option in terms of international travel, if you go there or you rent a cheaper hotel, you don't have that fancy concierge who will take care of you every single time. Then you need to find the phone number. Okay, you can do it on the internet. And then you need to find a phone or get Wi-Fi and call from your Skype and make a reservation. This is very inconvenient. That just doesn't look good. And it's way, way simpler to just get on the app and book a restaurant. So to come back to your question, UI would be one of the things which I would be watching for. If, for example, TripAdvisor changes UI dramatically, I may say, gee, I am doubtful that customers would like that. Another thing which obviously to watch out for, and that's not something that I'm concerned right now, but I will be watching. If I learn from my own experience, from my friends, that there are more and more, that there are other options which people can use to fulfill their task, which is now fulfilled by TripAdvisor, whether it's make a reservation, whether it's book attraction, whether it's read reviews about hotel or particular event or particular museum. And if I start hearing that more and more people are trying to use those, then it can also be a qualitative indicator that user engagement will fall going forward.
And moving forward one slide to slide number 13, I understand that TripAdvisor is a Liberty-related entity. And that would naturally suggest there's some share repurchase behavior and insider buying. Could you speak to any activity at the corporate level that might triangulate with the thesis?
Absolutely. Great question. And thank you so much, Shai, for reminding the audience and myself about Liberty involvement here. There is an entity called Liberty TripAdvisor. The ticker is LTrip. So the ticker of TripAdvisor is Trip, and the Liberty TripAdvisor is LTrip. So LTrip owns roughly 30% of the shares outstanding. And those shares are pledged against some loans. And technically, if shares go below a certain point or some other financial covenants are breached, then banks can foreclose. I think it's extremely unlikely that someone will try to foreclose on Liberty shares, quite frankly. So, but that part exists. Now, as Shai pointed out, Liberty and Dr. John Malone are well-known masters of capital allocation and share buybacks. So historically, TripAdvisor has done a couple of waves of share repurchases. Some of them were bought several years ago, and after that, shares performed dramatically well. Another wave of share buybacks was in 2017, late 2016, and first two quarters of 2017. They were substantial. However, there were no share buybacks in the third quarter 2017. And we don't really know why, but we can make some interesting hypotheses. So one hypothesis which we can make is that Trip management was in possession of information that precluded it from exercising buyback. What were we talking about? So every now and then, and by the way, that has been happening for many, many years, every now and then, there is another rumor, there is another media article that Priceline or someone else will go and buy TripAdvisor. And after that, you know, shares spike and people got interested and ta-ta-ta-ta. So it's plausible that there were some conversations between TripAdvisor and Priceline during third quarter of this year. And as a result, TripAdvisor could not execute on share buybacks. That's a possibility. Another possibility is that TripAdvisor management are smart, intelligent people, And they, when they were looking at the results, when they were getting into third quarter, they saw that there will be challenges in their hotel business, and most likely market would not like third quarter results. By the way, market did not like third quarter results. Shares dropped by roughly 25 or 30%, depending on whether you take closing prices or intraday prices, which is a massive drop if you think about it. And it's quite possible that management said, we believe in the company, we believe in what we're doing, we're building something incredible here, but market in the short term is a voting machine, not a waiting machine. So we expect that third quarter results will lead to significant price drop. So why we should buy our shares now? Let's just wait, announce third quarter results, and if we're right and share price drops, then we can go buy exactly the same shares at a significantly lower price. So I personally hope that as we speak, management is executing share buybacks and buying as many shares of TripAdvisor back on the open market as they can.
And if we could please jump to slide number 29. I have in front of me an article from Bloomberg, which was published on November 7th, 2016. The Bloomberg article has the headline, quote, OpenTable comes back to bite. And in the very top of the article, if I could read it out loud, the Bloomberg article from 2016 is stating, late Monday, when reporting its third quarter earnings, Priceline Group Incorporated surprised the market by writing down the value of OpenTable by $941 million. That's more than a third of the $2.6 billion U.S. dollars it paid for the online restaurant reservation system just 2 years ago. I'd love to throw three possible scenarios at you and just get your sense of how you calibrate different reactions. On one hand, it's positive because this means TripAdvisor is making very meaningful inroads and it's a very serious competitor. On the other hand, it's negative because maybe the OpenTable business model somehow got impaired. And on the third hand, maybe it's neutral because Priceline just paid too much. How do you calibrate this narrative?
I'm really, really grateful that you brought it up because it was something that I was considering including into the presentation, but then decided not to in order to save time and space. So I really appreciate that you asked me that because it's a fantastic question. So I will tell you how I think about it. So first of all, when Priceline bought OpenTable, it paid a very healthy price for that, really healthy. Why did it do that? So at that time, it was already pretty clear that OpenTable is the dominant player in the US online reservation market. And we saw that in the numbers. It was growing incredibly rapidly. It was generating fantastic margins. It has proven its business model. OpenTable went public, I believe, in 2009. And it clearly shown over the next few years as a public company that they were able to execute well and they proven their business model. Now, OpenTable also had presence outside of the US. It was present in a few international markets, Germany, Japan, and a few others. And I believe that Priceline was buying OpenTable not just because it saw what OpenTable has achieved in terms of its dominance in the United States, but also because it wanted to get OpenTable to the worldwide dominance. And I think that vision failed. And that's why Priceline had to take a massive write-off, $942 million, it's almost $1 billion, on its acquisition of OpenTable, which it paid $2.6 billion as far as I remember. And that's, I believe, the rationale behind it. So the way I calibrate your scenarios, the scenarios which you pose try as hypothetical is this. I view it as incredibly positive for TripAdvisor because in my opinion, it shows how robust Lafourche Chat and TripAdvisor reservation business is in European countries. It showed that OpenTable failed to get on the turf of TripAdvisor and Lafourche Chat. Obviously, it probably would mean that TripAdvisor is very unlikely to get on the chart of OpenTable, meaning would get a decent share in the United States. But I don't expect that. Now, I do not view the cry down at all as any evidence of weakening mode of open table. So to sum it up, it boils down to open table inability to grow internationally. And number two, the price, which price line, like there is no business for which you cannot overpay to make it a bad investment.
I'd love to please jump towards the very end again, slide 114, where you gave the summary. Given that you've put considerable thought into this idea, I would love to almost explore a pre-mortem. Should the thesis go meaningfully off track in 5-10 years from now, what moving parts have the most risk of effectively killing the idea?
Fantastic question. I'm also a big fan of pre-mortems. So to me, pre-mortem would go like this. Being stressed by the public markets and board of directors, TripAdvisor management team decides to prioritize short-term over long-term. Given that it's facing significant challenges in its hotel business and it wants to please the public markets, it decides to slow down investments in non-hotel business and use them as a cash cow. Instead of continuing to invest in expanding internationally in both attractions and restaurants, it decides to use them as cash cows. User experience suffers. Restaurants and attraction vendors are not pleased with TripAdvisor performance, and slowly their moat starts eroding because they forgot about the most important thing. They forgot about their customers and communities that they serve. That forgetfulness would cost TripAdvisor dearly, as someone will come and try to disrupt them if their customers are unhappy and ready to leave. That would be my pre-mortem.
And moving forward one slide to your contact details, if we could. I mean, Artem, this has been an absolute delight. Thank you for sharing so much of your time above and beyond, which is remarkable, and such extensive research. I'd love to please ask, what type of feedback would be most helpful to you, and in what ways could we as a community return the kindness?
Well, I'm always happy to present at Manual of Ideas conferences, so thank you again, Shai and John, for inviting me. In terms of giving back, any feedback from the audience will be very much appreciated. If people see holes in the investment thesis, I would love them to reach out to me. If there are people in the audience who have experience with TripAdvisor as vendors, maybe someone owns a restaurant which is on TripAdvisor in Europe. Maybe someone owns a tour operator in Las Vegas which does Grand Canyon helicopter tours, for example, and they know how it feels to be on the other side of a table of TripAdvisor, across TripAdvisor, and how to use their products. Please reach out to me, because we've done our research, we've spoken with industry experts, we studied substantial amounts of filings, we spent a lot of time on business models, but someone may have better knowledge as a customer, and we would love to hear from those people. We're always happy to discuss interesting investment ideas, and as we outlined, Karokan focuses on special situations and compounders. And also, if there are any people in the audience who are interested in becoming capital partners with Karokan Capital because they like our investment philosophy and our in-depth research, I'm obviously more than open to receive those emails.
And I'm noticing you have both an email address and telephone number. What is your preferred communication channel?
Either way is fine.
So Artem, on that note, once again, a very big thank you for being here with us and choosing to share your wisdom with our community. We hope to welcome you back. And again, great to have you here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shai.